You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on The Cooligans, we are talking about the Kuva remix. U.S. men missing out on the Olympics yet again. That's three times in a row. We talk about the friendlies out in Europe, and we talk about CR7 flipping out and losing his mind after an international match.
This remix stinks. Plus, we also talked to Reggie Cannon all the way from Austria. We talked to him before the friendlies, but he talks about his new life in Boa Vista. As he pronounces it, he's so fancy. Plus, we talk about what music they may or may not have played during his wedding. That and more today on The Cooligans!
Yo, it's me, Dave Vianich here, and I've been hanging out with The Cooligans, having a nice, and I hope you've been having a nice too.
Come on.
Reason enough to celebrate, okay? We double vaxxed up on a Tuesday evening, okay?
Bro, Christian, next time I see you, I'm kissing you with tongue, all right? We vaccinated, baby, or at least I am. You need to step your game up and get your BMI up, my G.
Yeah, bro, I've been slacking. I blame myself, okay?
Right? Your girl making you eat healthy, right? You're conscious of your weight. Bro, this is slowing it down, baby. Look at me. I've been eating zaps left and right, baby. I'm good to go.
Well, congratulations, Alexis. Okay, Nutmeg is happy for you as well.
Wonderful.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right, we are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that has ever lived right here on Fubo Sports Network.
All right, it's also the gulliest and also the most half-vaccinated. All right, baby.
Okay. All right, though some shows might be full vaccinated, but no. Okay, we like to live on the edge, all
also,
right?
Some might be half, but we're the most half. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. The fractions are, look, it adds up. Don't question it too much.
You go do the maths. We'll be all right. We'll be here when you get back and you see we right.
We have an exciting show today because we have an incredible guest all the way from the U.S. Men's National Team camp in Austria. Reggie Cannon will be joining us, the man of Boa Vista from Portugal.
Well, as he pronounced it, Boa Vista. You know, just like, damn, fam, you ain't been there that long. It's like your friend comes back from vacation in India and they're like, namaste. And you're like, nah, fam. You from Cleveland. You know
really
what I mean?
Really committed. Okay. I'm glad.
What happened on that trip, dude?
but we will be talking. Just a heads up, this was taped before the friendlies and before the Olympic qualifier. So we didn't get into that stuff, but we did talk about a bunch of other subjects. So
but we'll talk about that stuff.
We'll talk about that right now. Yeah. Because, look, you know what? I'm glad we spoke to him. We spoke to Reggie before any of this happened.
Because right, the tone would have been wild different.
Look, I wouldn't want to disrespect Reggie like that, okay? Right? And just bring him all this bad energy. So we save it for the show right here when we're by ourselves. The United States missing out on the Olympics again. We're missing out on the 2020 Olympics, and it's 2021. Nothing makes sense.
Since 2008. At some point, we have to realize as a country, our tradition is to not qualify for the Olympics. That's okay. Our Olympic tradition.
So if you have not seen or are unaware, the U.S. U-23s obviously played in the CONCACAF Men's Olympic Qualifier and lost in the semifinal against Honduras, lost 2-1. Both goals, especially the second one, was just painful, self-inflicted, a mistake by the back line, by the goalkeeper.
This was the Kuva remix. This was the Trinidad and Tobago remix. Literally, what happened in Trinidad and Tobago happened in this match. Win and you're in. Own goal. Yeah. One guy scores and yells, let's go. And everyone's like, nah.
Well, it wasn't an own goal, but it might as well have been.
I mean, essentially, we gave them the chance to score.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens when your keeper says, like, let me pass it to this guy not wearing the same jersey as my team.
Okay, so where to begin?
Here's where to begin. I got my second vaccination shot on Saturday. I was completely wiped out on Sunday. No energy. No, I couldn't get off the couch. I was drained. I watched that match laying down on the couch, and I was like, did all of them get their vaccinations yesterday, too? Because why?
They shouldn't have scheduled it on the same day, okay?
I get that it's important, but you got to think about the match. I mean, why did no one have energy? I know you were X amount of miles up in the sky. Fam, okay. Can we get a couple of Monster energy drinks from these folks?
Yeah, they shouldn't have played this game on the top of the Space Needle.
Right?
No, look, there can be a million excuses. Outside of simply playing, you know, outside of the bad goal, Ochoa obviously make a bad pass, and if you look at that play, the easy pass to make was to Justin Glad. Justin Glad says, no, go out wide. And he says, basically saying, I don't want the ball, pointing at his teammate, pass it over there. The keeper tries to make like a little move to pretend like he's going to pass over there and not. And then he ends up passing there. And dude sticks out his leg, ball goes right in. There was poor communication, especially in that first half.
But that goal is just a symptom of the issue across the board. Watching that game, it felt like nobody was like, people were waiting 2-3 seconds too late to make passes. Nobody wanted to step up other than Jackson Yuhl. No one stood up and said, yo, give me the ball. Let's do this.
Yeah.
It seemed like people were running the flanks completely open, wide, like calling for the ball. And everyone's taking like 3 or 4 extra steps or extra touches with the ball. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, there were so many bad touches, misplays, like ball going under people's feet, over their feet, like the ball was skipping. Like
I know that the pitch was trash. People were saying the pitch was like...
But it seemed to only affect the U.S. men's national team and no one else.
That's what I'm saying. Only when we got the ball, the pitch was like, ah, and then it goes back to beautiful when Honduras got it. It was embarrassing. And honestly, watching that match, I was like, yo, we don't deserve to win this game. I was, even as we were coming up, like, That Jonathan Lewis moment, I'm like, I don't even understand how the ball could have literally ricocheted off you at any point and it would have gotten in that goal. I don't know how it went the opposite way.
There were good chances, but by that time, once the U.S. was down 2-0, and for, credit to Jackson Yuhl, right, because that goal was a goal more out of like. You know, like I'm done. I'm tired of this shit. You know what I mean? Like that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't simply like, yo, let me get a golazo. Let me get a beautiful curl. No, it wasn't that. It was like, no. I'm going to hit this with the full force of all my U.S. men's national team ancestors who have missed the Olympics. Right.
Like, you know, when you annoy your mom, you're like, ma, ma, as a kid. And then eventually she's like, what? You know, that's what this goal was. It was like, that's it.
And so the misses from Jonathan Lewis were what it mostly felt like was like they were already so much in their heads. They weren't playing with the confidence that they were going to win that game, and then all these mistakes start piling up because the you could
but didn't we finish that match with one sub left?
I don't recall.
I think we finished the match with one sub left. I think if you're gonna blame anybody, the fault is at Jason Christ's foot, and that's it. Nobody else is. Nobody else is. You got to make the changes. You got to change the formation. You have to do something to let these players know you messing this up for everybody.
Well, the starting lineup was full of defensive midfielders in the midfield. You were like, you're wondering why the game was slow. It's like, well, these guys are that's not their game. Moving the ball forward.
Get someone who can pass.
The game was going at a snail's pace.
Now, we played at a snail's pace. We had a horrible match. I think the lineup decision, the formation decision, everything was wrong. Everything that led to the results was wrong. That said, I think Christ is the one to blame. I just can't think of anyone else. At the end of the day, it's your job is to inspire them. Your job is to figure out who are the best players to put out on that field. And I know a lot of people are saying like, well, it doesn't matter. That was our BU23 squad. Because really, at this point, our senior squad is our U23 squad. Sure, that said... Some of those players would have played in the Olympics. It wouldn't have been these players. These players just had to get us there. You know what I mean? Who do you blame? If you had to blame anybody, who do you blame?
I blame... Look, Jason Christ is definitely the big winner. We're going to have to create a pie chart for a blame. Jason Christ definitely gets like 60%. I'm going to give maybe another 20 to U.S. soccer overall. And I'm going to give another 20, frankly, to I'm going to give 10 to the pandemic scenario, because I think that is part of it. And then another 10% to the players themselves, right?
Well, I really like this pie chart system you have going on here. I'm just pointing fingers.
This is a delicious pie. Okay?
Yeah.
So
wow.
But I think that the scenario, right, the Olympic qualifiers were supposed to happen around this time last year, and when the players were in a bit of better form, right? And then if the pandemic doesn't happen, I assume that some European players are called in to this squad, to this roster, and we just have a stronger squad. So again, it's not an excuse for that, because
it's definitely something that should be mentioned for sure.
Yeah.
Then again, Honduras also had the pandemic. I don't know if you heard. Yeah, it happened all over the world.
It didn't affect Honduras. They were in a bubble and they had zero COVID cases.
Lucky. Y'all lucky.
It wasn't fair to begin with.
why just a little bit to U.S. soccer? Because a lot of people are blaming them more than Jason Christ.
No, I don't think in this scenario. I think U.S. soccer, from recovering after missing the World Cup, did the job that as best they could to create a better player pool, right? And we look, you mentioned it before. Our senior team is very young. We have incredible players. We have getting on Yunus Musa and Serginho Dest and having all these huge names to get on board with the program. You
and
have to give Greg Berhalter.
I just learned how to pronounce it. Sabichu.
Oh, okay.
The new striker. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
You were going to say, God bless you? You thought I sneezed there? No.
So you got to give Greg Berhalter and U.S. soccer some credit for patching things up and getting these players who could have played for other countries to pick the U.S. So with this particular team and this Olympic side, the majority of the blame has to go with, when you have a U18 or a U14 team.
Yeah.
How mad are you going to get at the players themselves for not winning tournaments, right?
Very. That's the question. I'm throwing stuff. I'm blaming them. I think overall, you're absolutely right. I think it's 60, 20, 10, and 10. And that does add up to 100. Took me a minute, but I did it. I think Jason Christ deserves most of the blame. I think the worst part of all this is, and I know some people are like, well, this doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter that we didn't qualify. Absolutely does. An opportunity for some of your best players, even if not all of them from the senior squad would have gotten a chance to come and play in this competition, to play in Tokyo because of COVID restrictions. I get all that. But the opportunity to get some really competitive matches under your belt in a competition like this, now it's all down to Gold Cup and the World Cup. You know what I mean? If we qualify, that's all it is now. Now we don't get this additional competition. Also, now we're all just going to watch the women's national team because they qualified.
we always were. I think these tournaments, look, nobody expects the U.S. men to win the Olympics necessarily. It would be great if they could go really far in the tournament. But the building of confidence that this does for future tournaments, for those World Cup qualifiers, the building of confidence for the future of this program is tremendous. And missing this tournament, you don't get to play against the Argentinas. You don't get to play against Germany, whatever teams are. Like, these are big tournaments. So the Olympics are the equivalent to the U17 World Cup or whatever. You don't want to miss those either, right? Because it builds the confidence in those young players. So for people saying like, oh, it's not a big deal because the player pool is so good now, we don't have to, we didn't miss out on the Olympics for the same reason that we missed out on the Olympics the last two times. But it's still no excuse. Having a bunch of great players is not an excuse to be like, oh, well, all right, no big deal. We'll get them next time. It's like, no, it's going to be 3 years.
3 years, bro. Also, it goes to show we ain't that deep. You know what I mean? all we have is our top layer of our senior team. And then after that, there's a serious drop off yet again. And I know last time it was more of our, tier A. Yeah, clearly this was our tier B you know, under 23 squad, but still, it goes to show it ain't that deep. We aren't all of a sudden, I know they're, you know, German teams are buying our players. Rome is buying a player. They only stole once from MLS, but we are not developing just a bunch of, you know, high quality, extremely high quality players. We still have to make up some of that ground. And then clearly this shows there's a lot of work left to be done.
Yeah, there's a lot from the players themselves to coaching, to picking the roster, to there was just so many things. You know, so even some people are talking about that even the group stage where they, you know, they couldn't score against Dominican Republic in that first half. And I mean, again, Dominican Republic, absolute soccer powerhouse. So I understand
well,
it.
Of some course other you people may score. Not. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're disrespecting my country, but right. You know, this is. They got exposed
that
semifinal, and you hope for the best. Look, we've had a lot of the players that were in that game on our show. You know, it's not about you know, knocking them or anything like that, but it is. I know that it's devastating for them as well, and as fans, it hurts us too. So we just got to do better next time. That's what we got to look forward. All right, so let's talk about the friendlies, the senior team, the U.S.
the other U23 squad.
Okay, we got so many. There were two friendlies, one against Jamaica, one against Northern Ireland. And look, I got to give credit where credit is due. U.S. men's national team, senior level, looking pretty good. There seems to be a lot of chemistry. There's cohesiveness. You're seeing what happens when you have a bunch of players playing in Europe, playing in Champions League, and then they all play together. So they look pretty good in both games.
Also, just consider how difficult it is. Like, in the past, we would have never looked good, regardless of the competition, we would have never looked good playing in Europe. You know what I mean? Yeah. Playing a men's national team game against European competition has always been difficult for us. I'm not sitting here saying we can't win those, or we didn't win those in the past, but just looking at how well we played against North Ireland, who can be a difficult team to score against. You know, they're not going to come out. There's not a lot of flair. Although some of the young kids, when they came in towards the end of the match, looked really good. But yeah, for the most part, it's like, you're going to have to beat them. You know what I mean? They're going to sit there and take a lot of pressure. You're going to have to find a way through it. And they look good. They looked really good.
There wasn't a moment in both matches, in either match, where I was like, oh, we're the worst team here. I was like, yo, we're clearly the better team here. And we should probably win this game. Even against Northern Ireland, where it was a little bit tougher than Jamaica, and you know, there were a lot of you know, storylines even behind with Jamaica. The you know, a lot of the players hadn't played together, but a lot of those players are also came from England and stuff like that. So it is a U.S. men's national team that we're not sort of used to seeing this consistency at this level.
There's also a swag about them, no? Like, there's something about it. I don't want to say it's confidence, but there is a... Individually, we're all pretty good, so we should be good when we come together. Like, that seems to be the general understanding. And I think it was Yunus Musa. Somebody said, this is the closest team group of guys that I've ever played with. Y'all just met! You know what I mean? How?
You just became American 2 weeks ago.
Bro, we thought you were going to go Italy or Ghana. Now, all of a sudden... This is the greatest like group of, but I mean, that goes to show someone's doing something right. Whoever seems to be the leader, whether it's Berhalter or someone in the squad themselves, someone seems to be bringing them all together. And it just feels like Serginho Dest feels like he wants to win with the U.S. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something about the way he's playing where he's like, it's not just about like, look how good I am. It's about like, we should all be winning. You know what I mean?
And that goal, the first goal against Jamaica was...
I mean, what a golazo.
Absolutely beautiful.
As soon as he hit that, I was like, Serginho, stop that, bro. What are you doing? We like Jamaica, you know?
To see a defender being able to take shots like that, I mean, you got to feel good about it. And then the celebration as well... Serginho Dest, he pointed at his wrist. He was like, I don't know if he was asking
give me
to
an
bring
Apple Watch.
I don't know if he was asking to bring in a relief pitcher, but he pointed at his wrist, you know, suggesting there was a watch there. And apparently, there was a story afterwards that Christian Pulisic and him had a conversation, and Christian told him, if you score, you got to point at your wrist because you got to tell everybody it's our time.
I mean, that could also come back to bite you in the ass a little bit. You know what I mean? I feel like whenever you do something like that, whoever your next opposition is, when they score against you, they might just go like, guess, you know, Maybe you need to fix your watch, bro.
Yeah, your watch broken, okay? It's a little slow, all right?
Damn, you should get an AP. Dude, you should do something because them bootleg watches you got ain't working. There was something about even the North Ireland match. I think the Jamaica match, no disrespect to Jamaica, but they really hadn't played together that much. It seemed like it was an easier task for us to play against Jamaica. Playing against North Ireland are one of those teams that, like, they're going to bunk. You know what I mean? They're going to bunker down. They're not going to allow you to really just sort of play around them. They had they had older guys. They had a dude on there that was 33. I think it was like something like his 55th, international match, something crazy like that. Like, they had some people on here who've got skill that could sometimes run circles around younger players who aren't as familiar with sort of the way of the, you know, like the CONCACAF type of skills. You know what I mean? Okay. The dark arts, if you will. So sure. I think it was good. It was good to walk away from that. With, I mean, look, what? One of them was a penalty. What was the other goal? I can't remember the other goal.
A deflection. Gio Reyna.
Gio Reyna scored a deflection.
It was a deflection.
So I wouldn't necessarily say we flexed on anyone, but walking out with even an ugly win, that's a good sign. That's a great sign for the future.
Yeah. The immediate future feels pretty promising right now.
Well, we got Sweden. We got Zlatan coming up, bro.
Switzerland? Oh, not Switzerland. Sweden.
Okay, so who knows? Maybe Zlatan plays for Switzerland next. Christian, let's talk about some other World Cup qualifying happening. Portugal versus Serbia. Nothing happened. Everyone's okay with it. No one's had to apologize. Let's move on. Okay.
Nothing to see here, folks. this was a fascinating game. Shouts to our boy David Vujanic, who is always on Twitter. If you ever see him, a lot of people complain about the international break, but he's like, "This is my favorite time of any footballing season."
It's not like they're powerhouses. You know what I mean? He actually enjoys it.
You have a lot more storylines, and obviously these matches are quite important, especially in Europe. Qualifying for the World Cup is not easy coming out of there. But I mean, this game ended 2-2 draw because a brace from Diogo Jota, and then. The final minutes of the game when Ronaldo, I think he got past the keeper, goes to take a shot, and it appears very much to cross the line. The referee.
Defender who slid and cleared it after it went over the line. It's very clear. You can see it in photos. Now, here's what I want to know. Everybody who's talking wild shit about VAR, where you at now? Imagine there was VAR in this. You would have gotten the goal, Portugal. And this is what I talk about when it comes to VAR. People hate it. And I know sometimes it's frustrating to see the offside with the dots coming down the guy's nose. And then you got the other guy's toe. And we're like, well, I mean, technically there was a little piece of the boot or the cleat over. So you're like, this is too much. Why are we using it here?
He's a size 12. The other guy's 11. We got to take away the goal.
Actually, he's a size 12, but he's using 13. I mean, that's illegal. You know what I mean? That's what's keeping them offside. Like, when all these things, like when you watch all these people freaking out about VAR, oh, I missed the days. This is what it used to be like.
This is what you missed right here.
The ball clearly went over the line, but they're like, nah, fam, we didn't see it. No, but there's cameras all over the place. So I don't care. I'm not allowed to look at it.
The ref ended up apologizing. He apologized to the coach, the national team coach for
remember
Portugal.
Remember those days when the ref would come back and say they messed up?
It's like, yo, fam, like, yo, completely on me. Yo, direct any of the emails. You just direct them to me, okay?
Now that I had time to marinate on what you said, you right. My bad. They don't do that no more. Because they're like, what are you talking about? We got NASA technology that sees how far your nose was from their shoe. Not anymore.
In this scenario, you know, for World Cup, World Cup is right there in the tournament.
We should have 3 or 4 bars.
you might need, at the very least, goal line technology or something, because it seems a little, irresponsible for how important these games are and what's really at stake to just be like a goal that clearly did happen is just wiped away from history.
And I also want to take a chance to say to any Serbians watching, I'm glad you got the draw. And if I ever go to Serbia, you're my people. You know what I mean? No disrespect to you whatsoever, my guys.
it is, like I said before, like this is what the game, it's like VAR has made us, have this recency bias, and we forget what it was like. We forget the no era penal with Mexico and the Netherlands, and we forget these moments of how we felt, of like, how could the universe allow something so just wrong to happen? But that's what the game was sometimes.
And the whole thing is like, all right, there's rules in this game. One of them being, if the ball goes over the line, it's a goal inside that netting. And you know what I mean? And it did, and you don't get it. I get that you feel bad about it, but the way Ronaldo acted was a little bit.
Yeah.
Like when you as a Latino child also probably felt the same way I did. Whenever you were at the supermarket or something and you saw a non-Latino child freaking out about not getting a toy, did you think the same thing I thought, which is, what are you doing, dude? They're going to beat your ass. Stop it. That's how it felt with Ronaldo.
Yeah. This ain't good. I think my mom is going to hit you. You better tell it.
Daisy about to pick up. I didn't even know she brought a chocolate though. She's wearing sneakers. Why did she put that in the purse?
He took off the captain's armband, threw it on the ground, walked off the pitch before the game once the final whistle blew. He had no interest in interacting with anybody. Didn't want to talk to the ref.
He's 36 years old. That's not how you act when you're 36, bro.
This is not captain behavior. So look, unless
you're the captain of that boat in the Suez Canal, you know what I mean? Because then you're like, who cares, dude?
Okay, he was whipping in.
I was trying to do a donut. There was a hot chick over there. I was trying to show her. You know, I got the moves on this boat.
Okay, doing some Tokyo Drift out in the Suez Canal. Right?
That's the only other captain that should be acting like that, Ronaldo.
Okay, again, we have Reggie Cannon coming up right after this. And as a reminder, yes, we will be talking to Reggie, but we did speak to him before the international friendlies happened.
But this is live from Austria, though. He came in from camp, bro.
Okay, so we'll be right back with Reggie Cannon right after this.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just want to bring in with a word from one of our sponsors, us, and you guys being Gully Squad. And you know what? Maybe I keep saying you. Maybe you're listening to this and you're not a member of Gully Squad and you're wondering why. Well, I've given you amazing, reasons why I've told you the Slack channel is absolutely amazing. Here's another reason why I think Gully Squad is absolutely incredible and why you should join is because whenever we have guests, and we've had everything from World Cup winners to MLS, Premier League, NWSL, legends of the game, we've had incredible, incredible players on our show, incredible guests from comedians like Roy Wood Jr. of The Daily Show, incredible guests. The only people who get to ask them questions besides Christian and I are Gully Squad. Gully Squad finds out early who our guests are, and they get the chance to put those questions in the Slack. Those are the only other questions we ever ask. If you want to be one of those folks, if you want to join the amazing Slack channel, if you want to become a part of this community, if you want to start, cooperating with some of the Gulliest kit, the kit that they're making for themselves, if you want to drop some knowledge in the coffee or the beer and wine liquor section or the food porn section, all that, you got to join Gully Squad. Most importantly, if you also want to ask questions of our guests, you either got to become a cooligan, which is impossible, right? Unless you're funnier than Christian, then try out, let me know. Or you got to join Gully Squad and join that Slack community. So if you want to do that, just go to shoutstous.com. Again, that's shoutstous.com. Or you can simply go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad. In fact, if you go to soccercooligans.com, it's our website. We worked really hard on it. We think it's really nice. And all over the place, you'll find buttons to join Gully Squad. So do it today. All right, baby, we're back on the Cooligans Living Room FC, and Christian, what an honor. This is our first guest from camp. Oh, my God.
Yeah, just calling in, just checking in on us.
Bro, he actually was like, yo, you guys good? I'm like, hold on, let's start the cameras.
Lot going on.
This is amazing. This is the most exciting I've ever been to say camp since I was a teenager. And I'm like, yo, we can't afford going to camp. No, this dude, absolutely amazing. Now plays in Portugal. You know what I mean? I feel like we got to have some patês de natas for my man, the one and only. You know him, you love him. Put your hands together for Reggie Cannon, everybody.
Reggie, what's good?
Nothing much. Thank you guys for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely honored. Obviously, the last time we spoke to you, you were, a defender at FC Dallas. Yeah. Now you are at Boa Vista. You are playing, obviously, for the U.S. Men's National Team. You are currently in camp. They are, as of the time we are speaking, the none of the friendlies have happened yet, but obviously Jamaica and Northern Ireland are coming up. Now that you are pretty much based in Europe and called upon when the U.S. Men's National Team are playing matches, how is that feeling now? What's the confidence for Reggie Cannon feeling like?
Yeah, the transition to Europe was one that was much needed. The level over here is so much higher, and it's giving me so much more confidence when Gray called on me. Because we have obviously a hectic schedule coming up with World Cup qualifiers, with the Olympics, Nations League. There's so much coming up that, you know, we got to have a really strong and deep group. I think that's going to be something that's really going to work for this group going forward. So I'm terribly excited for what's to come this camp.
Now, you playing in Portugal obviously changes a few things, right? Like, especially now, the focus is getting back on the men's national team, right? Focusing and staying in the men's national team, which you're obviously doing an incredible job. But, yo, you seem more confident, right? Like, there's something about you. Like, have you learned to say, yo, y'all ain't shit in Portuguese? Like, have you
learned? in a sense, yeah. Even though the team's not doing well, you know, individually I'm playing very well. And I'm really learning the ins and outs of Portuguese football and European football as a whole. You know, Portugal is obviously a very tactical country when it comes down to it. So I'm learning a bunch from the new coach and obviously from the players I'm surrounded by. I'm improving every single day. So my confidence is it's up there. But, you know, I'm obviously looking to improve every step of the way. I'm trying to be humble and I'm trying to learn from the guys who are above me and the guys who are beside me.
And I'm curious about, yeah, you know, you mentioned Boa Vista there, obviously are in a relegation battle, right? So coming from Major League Soccer to this scenario, what is the difference in how it genuinely feels of like, it is obviously every point matters. Yeah. How does that affect your day-to-day and preparation for the game and then game days themselves?
It's night and day. You know, every point, like you said, it shapes the week. If you lose the whole week, frustrated faces, guys kicking each other, no music in the locker room. It's that type of environment. It's life or death. And I think that's, you know, been the biggest factor going into the this European Championship. I think it's night and day, and it makes the biggest difference in the world on the weekend. You have those 90 minutes to grasp those 3 points, home or away. So I think the young guys, especially on Boa Vista, are starting to learn that. But, you know, because obviously we have such a young squad, but, you know, this squad is very talented, and I think once things start coming together, this team's going to be really dangerous.
Now, you're obviously playing at the men's national team camp right now. I'm sorry, not playing. You guys are training at the men's national team camp right now. Greg Berhalter's system, right? We've talked about it in the past. Where do you see yourself in, you know, in comparison to some of the other starters, some of the other folks that are coming in? You've been with the men's national team for a while, so you kind of have this, you're a blend of both a little bit of a veteran at this point because you understand what's going on, but, yo, you mad young still. You're like, don't call me a veteran. That man's got no grays. You know what I mean? So, like, how does it – where do you sort of you see yourself right now? Do you see yourself still fighting for a position, or do you see yourself as someone who can come in and kind of show everyone else the ropes?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously with the new names getting called into every camp, people making the transition from MLS to Europe, young guys transitioning from academies into the first teams in Europe, I think – I have a little bit of a different role than a year or two ago. You know, guys look at me a little differently. Obviously, I feel old, like I always say. I feel like a veteran, but I'm only 22. You know, because I'm surrounded by guys that are, you know, playing at some of the biggest clubs in the world at a younger age. You know, I think that's something to look forward to with this group. But, you know, obviously I want to lead these guys in the right direction because, you know, as talented as every team is, you're only as strong as each other. And the links are going to have to be strong going into World Cup qualifying because it's going to be tiring. Guys are going to be, you know, exhausted, traveling, playing. And I think, you know, knowing me as relentless and as much of a fighter as I am, you know, I think I bring a lot to this group, more so than just football. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of factors and components going into the future.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of leading the group or showing a couple of people the ropes, thank you for getting Yunus Musah to agree to join the United States. I mean, look, that was a big deal. A lot of people were if you saw any of this must have been a concerted effort from everybody on the team, because anytime Musah posted anything on Instagram, it was American flags. It was,
Ryan,
it was
like, yo, young join king, the team. Come to America, young American king.
What's the camaraderie like? But and also getting him to make that decision, it seems like the last couple years, the tide is turning as far as like dual nationals or quadruple nationals, like Yunus Musah, it feels like maybe we can talk about the U.S. soccer program, but it seems like the players themselves, like players want to play with this particular team.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it all really started when Serginho was making the decision between the two countries. He didn't know, you know, and we really just tried to befriend him. You know, obviously guys are nervous at their first camps, and you know, that's a huge decision to make. But you know, especially with Serge and Eunice, we really kind of rallied around them. We were positive around them. We showed them what it's like to be a team. We befriended them pretty quickly. We made them comfortable, and we showed what we're all about, changing the way the world views American soccer. And I think that's something both wanted to be a part of, obviously, with so much talent that they both carry. So I think it's something to be excited for in the future. But Eunice, I think, was a much harder one to reel in, you know, because I remember, I think it was about, Greg called me like a week before they announced it, that he committed, and he told me, you know, we got some exciting news, and I was like, really? And he told me that, you know, we got Eunice to commit, and I was like jumping up and down, because, you know, it's such a big deal. You know, we don't want to waste that much talent, and Eunice is such a great kid, man. You know, it's really looking up for the future of U.S. football.
Well, of all the new players, especially someone with Eunice and some of the other players that are coming in now, who is it that when you're defending against them in training and they're running towards you with the ball, you're like, not this dude again. Come on.
Yeah, I would definitely say going over two camps now, Eunice is definitely one of those guys, because when he runs at you, he's running at full speed. He keeps the ball really close to his foot. You know, he's a very dangerous player, and that's something that, you know, can't be taken for granted. I'm lucky he chose us, because he's a very talented guy. Very talented.
Okay, yeah. And so this was, we had mentioned this before, but João Cancelo of Manchester City mentioned, they said, who was the toughest you know, player to defend against? And he said Christian Pulisic. And just to hear that from about a player on Manchester City saying that about an American player overall, must bring the confidence up of the entire program.
Exactly. And a player like João Cancelo, who's arguably, you know, the best fullback in the world right now, or top two, top three, to say that defending against Christian Pulisic, which I can attest to multiple times, it's something to behold, because this group has taken so many steps in the past 12 months. So I'm really excited for the future.
Speaking of Christian Pulisic, what do you make of him kind of having a little bit of a struggle getting back on the field regularly with Thomas Tuchel? I know he's had him in the past, but as someone who, you know, faces sort of the same thing, you know, moving to a new team and maybe not having all that immediate confidence with a new manager and new coaches, what would you say to Christian Pulisic, or what do you make of it?
You know, I can't really speak on the whole matter, obviously, because it's two different levels of football. You know, obviously, I'm at Boavista, he's at Chelsea, but, you know, I experienced it with the change of manager. It's not easy in the slightest. New rules, new formations, new types of angles you have to show for, new tendencies. It's hard, you know. I haven't started every game for Boavista. I've started most of them, but, you know, sometimes the coach doesn't see you as the best fit because he views you in a different light than another coach. So I think, obviously, with as talented of a kid as Christian is, you know, he's doing a superb job, especially at a club as grand as Chelsea. I think, you know, he's always a positive mind. He's always a positive spirit at camp, and I think he's doing so much within the world of football, showing the world what Americans can do, along with obviously Weston and Dest and everyone. I think he's doing a super job, and obviously, you know, when he gets fully back on the field, fully back in that 11, I know he's going to be the most dangerous player on the pitch, as he always is. So I'm really looking forward to the future.
The other thing I wanted to ask about, obviously, you went before the transfer to Boavista. Obviously, there was a very big story, especially with you. You've been very vocal about it. You've spoken about it on a couple podcasts and things like that. But the scenario where, obviously, when fans were let back in to MLS matches, and during the beginning of the match when people were kneeling and dealing with the booing and dealing all the jeers and things like that, it was a frustrating thing for us to witness. Yeah. You were very vocal about it, and I'm glad that you were. But just looking back on it now, how are you feeling? You know, I know we're still dealing with it. The fight never really ends. But how are you feeling? You know, when you can reflect a little bit after some time.
You know, I'm honestly, it happened. You know, I have no spites or grudges or bitterness to Dallas. They've helped me so much in my career. they've given me an opportunity, and obviously I took the most of it. Obviously when it comes to that stuff, I'll always speak up whether right or wrong. Because I think it's important to spark conversation, because that will lead to a chance to educate people, especially on what's going on in people of color's lives, especially everything going on now. I think it's important to demonstrate that, because it sparks conversation, which gives a chance for education. So, obviously the situation was complicated, but, obviously with Dallas, I have no grudges. I'm fortunate to everyone there, the coaches, the staff, the owners. I moved on. I'm making the most of my opportunity now, and come summertime, we'll see what happens, because I've been committed to Boa Vista, and I love this club so much, man. And I've been fighting week in, week out for it, and I just obviously want to keep my club in the first division at this point. So I'm going to keep improving, keep going, and obviously with no grudges or bitterness toward Dallas, because they've done a lot for me. So.
So, look, I know we only got you for like 30 seconds left, but I do want to ask, when Sergiño Dest, a player that you guys know, Serge, as you guys call him, now we're all on nickname basis, when he scores a brace for Barcelona, what is that group chat like? Are y'all bigging him up, or are you messing with him like, you should have got three?
No, we're actually roasting him at camp right now for that underwear shoot he did. That was something else, man. But no, he's making waves, bro, in world football, and that's exactly what we want to see from our guys, because that ultimately sparks competition within the group, and then that sparks even further adaptation. So I think this group is developing so nice, and it's just going to be a matter of finding results and finding new ways to advance forward. So obviously scoring a goal or two goals for Barca on the weekend, and then having Messi run over to celebrate with you, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. So obviously we're very happy for him, and obviously we're going to keep supporting him.
Great. All right. Reggie, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us, man. Best of luck at camp. Best of luck, at Boa Vista. I hope you guys stay up. And, since the last time we spoke to you, you did get married as well. So congratulations as well. Look, a little man's growing up. It's great to see.
Oh, man. Was Eminem played at the wedding? Quick, yes or no?
It was not played at the wedding. I was very mad at my wife.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
The matrimony is off to a rough start, but it's all good. It's all good. Reggie Cannon, again, best of luck at camp. Best of luck at the friendlies. And thank you so much for joining us, man, on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Another one in the books. Thank you
so
much.
We're almost too good at this, by the way. I'm just going to say.
You know what, Lex? You read my mind. Thank you. thank you to Reggie Cannon for joining us. Yes, our first player calling in from camp, from U.S. soccer camp, all the way in Austria. Okay? Look, we have
Bring
the technology here.
What
we have
you
the
doing?
Technology here at Fubo to make calls to people in Austria. So
wow. We're the only ones. So
okay. ESPN ain't doing that.
Nah, fam. They don't even know where Austria is on a map. I mean, neither do we. But still, we got the call in. So
thank you again to Reggie Cannon. Make sure you follow him on all socials. Reggie at ReggieCannon15, Instagram, Twitter. He's great on there as well. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels. Follow us on Twitch as well. We do a lot of fun stuff there as well. Twitch.tv/SoccerCooligans. Follow at Fubo Sports and subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the program. All right, let us end the show the way we normally do. My name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cool!